is we're seeing inventory fly to market. And this started happening. Now, what you should be seeing seasonally in the housing market is inventory bottom in February.
Okay.
And at the end of, yeah, and at the end of the summer last year, we saw a lot of delistings, people taking their houses off the market because they weren't able to sell. We call it rage delisting because they got angry that they weren't able to get the price. And because a lot of our homeowners are boomers and these are second homes, or they're moving from a primary to a second home, all these, they can wait, they can afford to wait, but something happened. We don't know yet. What was it, the rout in crypto? Was it kind of the wobbliness in the stock market? Yeah. It wasn't lower rates because the time doesn't work out for it, but inventory just started flying to market, especially in California, especially in cities like San Jose. Something is up. I don't believe in the inventory shortage myth. It is a myth. I've been out on the road. I've been to these markets. I've been to Northeast markets. I've been in the Midwest. I've been in the South. I've been all over the country. There's no inventory shortage. We had a speculative mania in housing. You go to somewhere like Miami, Myrtle Beach, these are over 100 days. Austin is at 99 days. The average, or I should say the median days on market of all the 85 cities that I track are, it's in the 70s. You know, this is, I think to have a healthy market, I mean, we were in an insane market where, you know, homes were on for less than like 20 days or whatever. But I think a healthy market is 30 to 45 days.
Good day, everybody. It's me, just Steve Yang here. And I'm grateful to have Melody Wright with me today to discuss what's going on in the housing market. There's a lot of talk about housing from, you know, everything is fine to the market's about to crash. So Melody's here to separate fact from hype and tell us what's really going on. Great to have you back, Melody. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. And thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. So Melody, where's the housing market really right now? I mean, inventory seems to be up in some areas, but we keep hearing there's a huge shortage. What's actually happening? I mean, there's so many different narratives. I don't know how to piece together.
Yeah. And you know, the housing market is very large and we think that we can understand it based on a couple of data points and we really can't, but I'm going to tell you what's happening right now. We kind of entered our fourth year of a frozen housing market where, you know, for a long time, people were saying rates were too high, that was the, you know, and the whole time I was saying, no, prices are way too high, especially with the carrying cost of property taxes and insurance. And so, you know, in many ways, when we kind of turned the corner to 2026, it was almost the exact same story as last year. Like we had a strong couple of months, but then it slowed down again. But what we're seeing right now, Steve, is we're seeing inventory fly to market. And this started happening now. What you should be seeing seasonally in the housing market is inventory bottom in February.
Okay.
And at the end of, yeah, and at the end of the summer last year, we saw a lot of delistings, people taking their houses off the market because they weren't able to sell. We call it rage delisting because they got angry that they weren't able to get the price. And because a lot of our homeowners are boomers and these are second homes, or they're moving from a primary to a second home, all these, they can wait, they can afford to wait, but something happened. We don't know yet. What was it, the rout in crypto? Was it kind of the wobbliness in the stock market? It wasn't lower rates because the time doesn't work out for it, but inventory just started flying to market, especially in California, especially in cities like San Jose. Something is up, Steve. There's something going on there. And I think, you know, just thinking sort of macro and the layoff perspective, we've had a lot of layoffs at the big tech firms, but this layoff at Block, I think, is very interesting because of what it does to sentiment. You know, they're supposed to be sexy and lean versus these big, huge, bloated, you know, and then laying off half their workforce. Now, I don't believe that's totally due to AI. It's a combination of AI and offshoring. But I think something has happened, and you can point to a whole bunch of different things that has really started to shake inventory loose. Something is concerning. And now on top of this, you have what's going calling it in Iran. And so where we were frozen, I'm beginning to think, Steve, that we're going, there's going to be some thawing as people start to, whatever it was, whatever sent them to list that home in February, which is, you know, not seasonal because it's cold still in many places. You know, I think we could start to see price discovery this year. We've had price discovery in the South and the West. We haven't had it in the Midwest and the Northeast. But you can see in the Midwest that it's showing all of the signs of about to turn, just like the West did last year. And I should say in late 24. So, you know, what we need transactions. We haven't, we've had the lowest sales. Last year's the lowest sales since 1995. And then the year before that, that was the lowest sales since 1995. And these were lower than that. So this is insane. So that's where we are right now. There's a lot of different headwinds. There's a lot of different things that could change the speed of the correction. Cause as you and I have talked, you know, I don't believe in the inventory shortage myth. It is a myth. I've been out on the road. I've been to these markets. I've been to Northeast markets. I've been in the Midwest. I've been in the South. I've been all over the country. There's no inventory shortage. We had a speculative mania in housing. That's what happened, period. The Airbnb bros, the institutionals, building built for rent. You know, it's the mom and pop investors are massive in housing. You know, our owner occupancy rate is about 65%, but if you go to the coast, it's much lower than that. And the boomers are who own those homes. And landlording's just not fun anymore, Steve, with property tax and insurance and replacement costs just going through the roof. But I said a lot. Pull on whatever thread you want to there.
Well, I want to know. So first of all, I'm hearing you say that the shortage of housing is a myth and that's nationwide. There's not like different pockets of the
right.
So that's a myth right there. How long is like housing, you know, sitting on the market for? I mean, how long does it take? I mean, I've read somewhere that, you know, on Google that the Google search of can't sell house is spiking, maybe like, I don't know,
yeah,
how true it is, to record highs or whatever that means. But how long is, you know, right, are homes really, yeah, sitting, and what's a healthy number and how far off are we?
Well, so, you know, that it varies. Like, you know, you go to somewhere like Miami, Myrtle Beach, these are over 100 days. Austin is at 99 days. The average, or I should say the median days on market of all the 85 cities that I track are, it's in the 70s. You know, this is, I think to have a healthy market, I mean, we were in an insane market where, you know, homes were on, for listed less than like 20 days or whatever. But I think a healthy market is 30 to 45 days. Now, this is not the season. But the other thing that this is probably far worse, Steve, because what will happen is when they pull the listings, the clock stops. And so like there's a house right down the street from me, very nice home. They cut $50,000 off of it from 450 to 399. They couldn't get any bites. They took it off the market. When it comes back to the market, it's not going to age from that very first listing. It's going to age from. So that's the game that the realtors will often play, too, is they'll take homes on and off the market. So that clock stops. So, I mean, you know, some of the luxury that I'm seeing, Steve, has been sitting for over a year, 2 years. Like the luxury is, oh, my gosh, is building like crazy out there because everybody thought. Everybody was getting rich in 21 when wages were rising, and that's who they built for, luxury. That's who they built multifamily for as well. And that's the thing. It's like you can't look at just existing homes. You have to look at, you know, new homes. You have to look at all the multifamily we just built. And what we're seeing there is rent prices are coming down and vacancy is going up because they built a whole bunch at the same time that households are actually consolidating and household formation has reversed.
So I think the last time we spoke, you know, I was telling you I got out of two Airbnbs and it sounded like I got out just in time. You know, but how's the rental market right now? Is Airbnb still struggling? And would you say it's still not the best time to invest right now?
Oh, no. especially like, you know, you just, anybody that bought post 20, really 21, even really 20, they're going to be in a lot of trouble from this point forward because of all of those rising costs, you know, and so buying right now, you're going to be catching a falling knife. It could be a slow falling knife. You know, Steve, I think that, you know, there a lot of things have moved in the housing market. We've seen a ton of correction, but not enough to kind of turn the national narrative. But I think this is the year that we're going to make that turn where at the end of the year, we're going to end year over year on a national basis negative. Now, how much I think is going to depend a lot on it's an election year. There's going to be a lot of spaghetti being thrown at the wall. But an interesting article I read this morning is like we knew Fannie and Freddie had been buying MBS or mortgage-backed securities since May. The president then announced that they were going to do it, even though they'd already been doing it. And we have seen it has had very little impact at all in terms of what they were doing. But also, they're not buying a ton. Like when you just look at the latest report, it was 11 million, I think, on or 11 billion, I think, on Fannie and like 3 billion on Freddie. So they announced this thing. They had bought way more up until that point, actually, Steve, like 50 billion. They announced it and they slowed down the purchases. Why are they doing that? Okay. They just had the agencies had to take a massive provision for loan loss as well, because we're starting to see the agency books deteriorate. And remember, this is after they've done what they call non-performing loan sales. They actually take the delinquent loans on their books and sell them to hedge funds. So their delinquency numbers always look much lower than what is the reality. And a lot of times those hedge funds don't actually report to credit. So we are very misinformed about what delinquency is right now.
So how hard is it to get a loan right now? Is that still getting through? No problem.
I think it depends on the borrower. And what we're seeing with the Fed when they publish the mortgage refinance rejection rates, over 43%, the highest in their tracking, I'm dying for their new report, which comes out in early April, to see, and purchase was over 20%. So if you have a great credit score, decent credit score, and it doesn't even have to be decent for FHA, and you have a 3.5% down payment for FHA, and you have a job, like it's not going to be hard for you to get credit. If you're one of these Airbnb bros, it's probably not going to be hard for you. But what happened when student loans started credit reporting, a whole lot of people just got knocked out of the game. And that's why you're seeing such high rejection rates for refinance and purchase. And it's not necessarily that the banks are pulling back, although I think that they are where you're seeing caution as you're seeing caution in appraisals and things like that. So they're not necessarily pulling back. They're just, if you're not qualified, you're not qualified. And you don't have, you know, housing has always been boom and bust. And when you're in the boom cycle, like there's a house selling next door at a higher price, like, you know, it sells. And then next week, another one, a little bit higher. And so appraisers can come in there and be like, oh yeah, like I can justify this appraisal. But now what's happening, especially when people go back to refinance and they haven't done those improvements because they haven't had the money, the appraisals are coming in lower. And that's really your bigger problem right now. Fannie Mae did a study and said, you know, almost 55% of appraisals were overvalued during the boom, the COVID boom. So we got a lot of people who are, and this is what you and I talked about, very deluded by their Zestimate. Because Zillow is not coming into their home and doing a property inspection and a real appraisal. They're looking at comps 30 miles away from you, like, which, you know, if you live in Kyle, Texas, you've got Austin comps, but ain't nobody moving to Kyle, Texas, who has a choice. I mean, if you don't have a choice, you're a young single family, that's the only place you can afford to live. That's one thing. But anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was filling out a form just, I don't know, like several weeks ago. And it said, what's your home worth? And I remember our conversations. I'm like, well, I can tell you it's not Zestimate. And they're like, just give us a Zestimate. I'm like, that ain't it. I know, because I spoke with Melody Wright. But that's all what everyone knows. And so, yeah, if
yes,
55% are diluted, or in terms of what they think their house is worth, I mean, what's the solution? I know you mentioned some other websites, but and getting an appraisal, but is there something else that you want to recommend in terms of informing what our house might be worth?
Well, you know, you can use resources like yeah, we kind of talked about foreclosed.com, Property Radar. These are going to give you a better idea of what's actually happening in your neighborhood. Because as you know, Steve, you know, something we learned from The Big Short and living through the GFC is the guy with the big truck and the boat is usually the one
that's in the most trouble.
Out the door. Yeah. And they're the ones that bought these houses. And it's funny, in every, you know, funny, not funny, in every single story about a fraudster, right? There's always some gigantic real estate purchase. I mean, just gigantic. And this is the bezel. This is, you know, Michael Pettis talks about it well from the Carnegie Endowment, that like, it's the fat that sits in the middle of everything that you don't really even know, that it's filler, I guess, not really fat, but like filler. And then it gets flattened like a pancake when you realize all the fraud that's happened. And this is what we saw with like Tricolor, and now MFS in England, and which it was a mortgage scam. So they're double pledging. We've got so much bezel because we gave people so much money through PPP and ERC, and you know, just these disaster loans. We just gave people so much money. And I'm not talking about their stupid $1,800 checks or whatever. It was those programs that those two already had assets leveraged to go out and buy more assets. And so that's, we've got to let all that speculation rinse through the system.
So last time we spoke, we talked about, you know, how things are supposed to be different. It's, you know, to avoid the 2008, 2009, whatever it is, just the, you know, loans are safer is the narrative. Where it's not the same thing. And last time we spoke, you were talking about the fraud that were, you know, just everyone's not accurate in terms of what they're reporting. How are these things going through? Is it just people are just looking the other way? I mean, is there a reason why things aren't being enforced? How do we avoid this in the future? Because it seems like things are not looking pretty right now.
I study historical cycles, and I think this is just a credit cycle. You just get, be it, you know, a private actor, be it the government. They just, when you're in a credit cycle, you bring everybody in through the door that you can I just got a random $250,000 personal loan text. Like, would you like $250,000 in a personal loan? It's like, no. But if I'm desperate, if I'm one of these Airbnb bros, like, and I got 10 properties not cash flowing, I'm going to do that. I mean, and that's what all these lenders know, is that, you know, there is, and what the banks did is they pulled back because of Basel III. I think they want back into mortgage, but that's a longer conversation for another day. But they pulled back. And what did they do instead, though? They lent to these non-depository financial institutions, NDFIs, private credit, all these guys. That's who they lent to. So they're still exposed here. But I would say that that's probably the biggest difference in this cycle, is that we have it's like corporate subprime now versus like the individual subprime. But, you know, I think in some ways, I sat in offices of these non-bank lenders to the Airbnb bros, and they really didn't think they were doing anything wrong, you know, because on paper, like these bank statement loans, right? Yeah. Well, it looks like they've got $100,000 in their bank account, and it looks like they're getting $100,000 every month. It's the same $100,000. I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, when you do this risky type of lending, then I just don't think we can Henry Ford credit. It's something we've been trying to do. It's really what happened during the last cycle, and we tried it again. But you always learn how to game the system. And now what you're saying, there's a big bank in Australia that just got in a whole bunch of trouble because AI fake documents. And we know that's already happened in multifamily lending. Freddie, like, there were a bunch of bad actors that got blacklisted. But so, you know, there's
Melody,
just so...
Melody, could you go back to Australia? What happened there in Australia?
I think it's called like Commerce Bank. Basically, a deep AI fake documents like bank statements, paycheck stubs, because that's, you rely on all this kind of stuff when you're doing the underwriting. Yeah. You're supposed to do e-verify. So I'm not exactly sure how this happened. But, you know, I kind of think AI could probably deep fake e-verify too. That's a supposedly a service where you can, you know, quickly check if people are employed where they say they are employed. But, you know, smaller lenders, that would work just fine for them. You know, I'm pretty sure, Steve, we're going to hear about a very large fraud at one of the big non-bank players that was just that one of the correspondent lenders that like buys up other people's loans that have lent. I think we're going to probably hear about a big fraud ring, especially in FHA, because investors went after this program because it's no skin in the game, 3.5% down, and you didn't even have to pay your mortgage because they came up with this loss mitigation program where you could just keep not paying, go back, say, I can't pay. They just put the amount at the back of the loan. I mean, it's kind of insane. In a way, they were buying down rates, like the builders, by... You take that money that they didn't pay you, that balance, you put it back in a non-interest bearing lien. Like it's very insane what has happened. And there's just so much, Steve, like, you know, most of the people out there talking about housing talk about inventory and prices. You know, they don't talk. And a lot of people also that I've noticed, they don't understand the credit cycle that talk about housing. And, you know, I started in mortgage in 2006. All of our prime books look just fine. I mean, they look great. Our subprime was about 12% of our portfolio, you know, in about late 2007, early 2008. And we moved all the way to prime. But what did I see after 2006? The prime book deteriorate. Why did it deteriorate? That was just fine lending. Most of it, same reasons, layoffs, jobs, increased costs, that kind of thing. So we're just going through a credit cycle. The difference for this one versus the last cycle are our demographics, and they are very different, very different. The boomers don't have 20 more years in them. You know, like they're going to have to let go of these properties. And that inventory is going to blow people's minds, and there'll be more Airbnb inventory, to your point earlier, as well. That's going to blow people's minds when it starts swarming.
So you mentioned boomers, you mentioned Airbnb. Who is the most vulnerable right now, and where is the biggest opportunity for investors? Is it just, first of all, is it investment advice, pile up the cash and wait for the back up the truck when things get crazy low? What kind of investment advice do you have, and where's the next opportunity coming?
Yeah, so I don't give investment advice, but I'll tell you what I am sitting on, you know, cash and metals, and that's, you know, that's based on everything that's sort of going on. But I think there's going to be plenty of opportunity in the future. But if you want to get involved now, what I would tell people to do is get close to your municipalities, get close to those government agencies, because they just passed a big bill in committee on housing that's going to be a lot of like giving cheap loans to investors so they can, similar to the Buy the Block program in Rochester, where you get, you know, cheap loans to buy up a whole bunch of homes if you rehab them, things like that. And so get close to your local governments, get close to Fannie and Freddie. They're going to need help when this delinquency rises and becomes a material population.
So the boomers are the most vulnerable. Is that?
Sorry. Yeah. I didn't answer that part.
Yeah.
Well, most vulnerable, you know, it's how we define it, right? I think the most vulnerable people right now our 18 to 24 year olds, that unemployment rate is just unbelievably high. But the boomers, in terms of monetary wealth, they're the most vulnerable because, I mean, they own the most assets. And so if we see a correction in the stock market, if we see a correction in housing, like they're going to be hit pretty hard.
So the narrative I hear is that interest rates is the big culprit. We like to point the fingers at the interest rates, but I'm not sure how much that would help. I know that we talked about the price being the issue, but what would it take for us to really, break the stalemate? Or is there a correction that needs to happen? And what would that look like?
Yeah, 30-year mortgage rates have averaged 7.71% since the early 70s. So, mortgage rates aren't historically high. Realtor, an industry publication, came out and said that for homes to become affordable, and what they mean is the payment. That's what's wrong with underwriting is they don't look at can you afford this house? It's can you afford this payment? That rates would have to go down to 2.65%, but I don't even think that would do it because of these credit issues, because of these younger cohorts getting completely dinged on their credit scores. And so and honestly, what we saw when rates started coming down a couple of weeks ago, purchase applications went nowhere. They've since, when it went under 5, we got a little bit of a bump, but nothing. I mean, historically speaking, in February of 2020 when rates were low, I remember my life being upside down because I was working at an AI imaging project at a big bank. And we went from processing 100,000 pages today for refinances to 1 million pages because that was the interest in refinance. You're not seeing anything like that. And so the rates to me, although it would make things, I was personally hopeful we'd stay under 6 so we could get price discovery. But if anybody wants to, you would have to explain the builders to me then. Explain how they've been buying, doing permanent rate buy downs, not even short term. They started off doing these 3-2-1s where it was a gradual thing. Then they went to permanent buy downs. And I'm talking, rates below 4%. Their sales have not been off the charts either. And so you can just look at them. And we don't have, that last print was in nowhere real. They just pushed forward a number that they revised October from 57,000 to 48,000. And then they'd said, okay, November and December, about 57,000. I mean, so we have no clue. We can only go off what builder sentiment is, and it dropped again. So I don't think if it was rates, then the builders would be doing way better than they're doing right now.
So there's a lot of noise in the media, a lot of headlines. Hard to know which narratives is accurate. Is there a narrative that you hear that you think is very misleading, or you think, man, that's completely off, that maybe the mainstream doesn't know about?
Well, I think inventory shortage is one. I think anybody should just drive around a little bit and see how much vacancy we have, generally speaking. For some reason, they're missing the demographic story completely. I don't understand. When they talk about we haven't built enough homes, they look at, well, we built this many at this time, but they don't look at that as a, and compare it to, well, how many new households are we about to have, or what is our why just because, we stopped building after 2008. Well, that's because we built too much. I mean, we had bulldozed some of that. And so they're like, well, we didn't build for these since 2008, almost 20 years. It's like, because you didn't need it. You didn't need it. And it's like, okay. So it's just dumb. It's just very again, not looking at anything else but, oh, this set of data. I'm to the point. Although I've talked to real people who are smart who just haven't thought about it. But I mean, how can you not think about it? I mean, this, we're not, we're not at replacement rate, you know, and we have this huge cohort that's going to be dying off, unfortunately, you know. So it's just weird. I think that's a, and then the delinquency, that's a big myth, because everybody looks at the Fed schedule for delinquency. This commercial banks, the majority of lending happens at the non-banks. And so then you have to look at the only industry provider. Steve, let me share this story with you real quick, because this will, so each year, as I keep studying this, I realize how misleading everything is, right? And to the point where it's like, this is all a lie. Like, they're modeling data and they're telling us that it's real, but it's modeled. You can see it. You can see the model. Like, I can figure out the model. I can figure out how, but here's the evidence. And it's very hard to prove. I've sent emails to all of these people asking them questions about their data collection, I get no response. I did get some responses from realtor.com. in the beginning. But here's a little story. So I was writing a commercial real estate piece on, and I was talking, I always like to go macro and then to the micro. And there was this one multifamily building in Nashville that Trepp had highlighted. So I went deep in on it. Well, according to RealPage, which, by the way, settled with the DOJ on a price fixing case for rent, RealPage, you know, big in the industry, what they were accused of was like price fix, like the algorithm. And you could see this, rents weren't going anywhere, and people would, it was very mob style tactics. Well, anyway, you could always look up a multifamily building in your neighborhood and see what the occupancy was, what the rent price was. Well, I had seen how their occupancy never changed. So I go and look in this one apartment, it's like 96.4% occupied. I was like, oh, wow. Like, and this is happening, and they have a DCR of below one, it's 0.9. Then I go to the Freddie securitization performance data, because they report on all their REOs and foreclosure or real estate owned. 67% was the occupancy they reported.
Wow.
We cannot trust these industry providers to tell us anything. And by the way, who provides inventory and median list price to the Fed? Realtor.com. We don't know crap, Steve. Like, you just have to triangulate the data and then go look for yourself, because this is all fiction.
So I think it was a Zillow, maybe one of the Zillow was one of them. I was looking up, you know, like where the housing market is, and Zillow economist was saying everything is fine.
Of course.
And so I don't take Zillow seriously, but, there's a lot of stuff out there where it's kind of biased, or you just can't trust them, because it's in their best interest, I would imagine, for the housing market to go really well. So you're saying
their paycheck depends on it. Yeah.
So in terms of what you're listening to, it's just important to listen to the voices. It's great. Thank you for, you know, coming on here and sharing with us kind of your thoughts here. But you did mention several things about, like, Iran, you mentioned the election year, you know, all the different moving parts that you're keeping an eye on. What are you paying attention to, and where do you see us going for the rest of 2026 and beyond?
So what I'm paying attention to is not what the administration says, what it does. So blaring out there, they're buying $200 billion of MBS, but then barely moving the needle, you know, buying less than they were before they made the announcement. So what is happening versus what they're saying? That's something that I'm really paying attention to. I'm also paying attention to Property Radar tracks deceased borrowers. And in my cities, all my 85 cities, I'm watching those numbers grow and grow like exponentially. And this is what people don't realize.
So when, morbid, you know, Melody.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I'm kidding.
Mean, I'm so sorry. No, believe me, I get hate all the time for just saying facts.
I mean, it's an important number. I interrupted you.
Right. No. But so Charles Schwab did a study, and 70% of inherited homes get sold. And what I have seen, I've even helped some people, is they get caught up in probate. So it always takes time. And this is another reason why people think we don't have a lot of inventory, because this has just started to happen. And so we're seeing a lot of these. I was at a real estate auction last week, Steve, and that guy had been dead for 3 years. Like, that's how long it took for them to actually, and that property had been vacant for 3 years. And that's how long it took to get that thing to auction. And this stuff just takes like a ridiculous, we have so many crazy laws and notice, all this kind of stuff. It just takes a ridiculous amount of time. But we're going to start seeing that stuff come to market even more. But I think also I'm watching what's happening geopolitically. I mean, this is, talk about, we were all nervous about the stock market. Now we're all nervous about World War III. Like, it's I don't think the media is doing a good job of really covering how bad it really is, right now. And of course, we're in the fog of war, but this thing is spiraling, in ways that I don't think maybe were anticipated. I think some of it was anticipated, but I think it is spiraling a little. So I'm watching all that, and I'm watching local politics, because like in San Diego, they're about to pass, it looks like, a tax on vacant homes. And that and honestly, I'm a big libertarian, Steve. Yeah. Because they know, like, if you go to Miami right now, I lived in a ghost condo in Miami. I was there, in the summer. Okay, so fair enough, it's hot in Miami, people don't want, but when I tell you, I was in one tower of like 50, where there was one light over here in a 50-story building. I was one of three people in a 20-story, condo. It's ghost condos. It's ghost because what people do is they launder money through housing. Florida's a big state where that happens. California too, or let's say, Chinese will come and buy a property and keep it, and it's just empty. So what's happening, actually, there was a big case in LA of a vacant home. They found a bio agent or something. I don't know what exactly finally happened with that, but it was in an empty neighborhood. It's not a neighborhood that's empty of houses. It's a neighborhood full of empty houses. So it's there's so many things going on, Steve. It's hard to say. I'm paying attention to everything that I can possibly get into this brain. And it's hard these days because there's so much going on, but you have to triangulate the data because to put the puzzle together, because there is just, we are not getting the full story.
So, with all the
Sorry.
moving parts, all the things we're juggling here in your brain, thank you for giving us a window into that. Where do you see things going? And I'll give you a benefit of the doubt if World War III happens, and the numbers
Oh,
are off,
thanks. Thanks,
or
Steve.
where things go completely awry. There are certain things we cannot predict. I want to make clear, but like, what are your thoughts on where we might be headed?
Yeah, I'm hanging up the precise forecast game. Only did that so I could get on a debate with a certain housing
Did you win?
industry analyst. I won the debate. I did
Of
not win the
course.
forecast. But anyway, and it's just dumb because there's just so many things that happen, I think we're gonna go, so I know where we're ultimately going to land. We're going to land where housing is not going to be interesting anymore, thank God. It's not going to be a speculative asset anymore. House prices will make go back to their historical correlation to median income, unless something changes. But that is going to happen. And so that means a correction in many places of 50%, in some places not as much. And location does matter. And there are real places in the country where there is actually not enough inventory, but those are few and far between. Often you can find that the inventory is just misallocated. Again, either with second homes, like our Airbnbs. I mean, San Diego, it just looks like when you look at the Airbnb map, it looks like an infestation, a swarm. Like it looks like a disease map. And many of these Airbnb maps look like that. I would encourage anyone to go to Inside Airbnb and look up any of our US cities. It's insane. And then layer that on top of a Zillow map and you're like, holy. So you've got all this for sale. And then you also have all of this that is an investment where when people run out of money, they're going to have to get out of that investment. Or they just walk away because it's a pain in the neck.
So,
yeah. So where do I see this? Down.
Was it?
I see this going down, you know, I see, but it could take a very long time. And right now I'm really trying to focus on what's the speed that is happening. Cause last year it kind of slowed down, and in 23, believe it or not, Steve, we had real declines, but BTFP, all that liquidity in the system kind of kept it going for a little bit longer. But yeah, go ahead. You were saying.
So you said that we're going to be moving towards a time period or era or whatever where housing market is going to no longer be speculative. It's going to be based off of median income. My understanding of supply and demand is like, well, if people want to pay for it and there's a demand for it, the price will naturally continue to feel that pressure to go up. So how do you unpack that for me?
We have too much supply. There's not, and we have no demand. I mean, we have no demand, like the lowest home sales since 1995, and we've increased population by 20%. That's insane. That's insane. And you know, who was it? I can't remember. It was Realtor or Zillow put out an article recently about we have 1.5 million missing Gen Z households. It's like, you do. And this is what they all said, like the millennials are going to form households, Gen Z. Well, they can't afford it. Nobody can afford it. So that's why rent's going down. Even renting, which is now less expensive than buying in almost every city across the country, it's going down. There is no demand for housing. People cannot. Now, if it became affordable, there would be demand. Absolutely. And so, but that when it becomes affordable, we're going to also, again, be hitting that silver tsunami. And so the supply is just going to keep overwhelming the demand. I mean, unless we start having babies like we used to, and unless we open the borders again, I'm not advocating for that, but that is what would change things. If immigration policy changed, then, that my thesis would change.
Melody, how do people find you, follow your work? I've learned so much. Love the fact that you gave us a window into your brain. But if people want to do more research, follow more Melody Wright, where do they go?
Well, if they're not terrified after that, they can find me on X Twitter at @M3_Melody and also at @M3Melody Substack. And I would encourage folks to sign up for even the free version, because I like to I'd like to give a lot of data in the free version as well, just because this is it's kind of a educating people on what's really happening. It's kind of a passion for me, and so I want as many people at least understand kind of the thesis so they can go and test it out themselves.
Awesome. Melody, thanks for being here. I'll put the show notes in the show notes. We'll put your links and socials in there. So everybody, I'm just Steve Yang, learning alongside you from people smarter than me, like Melody Wright. Thank you for your expertise on the housing. Everybody, stay smart, stay curious, stay disciplined. Thanks, Melody, for being here.
Thank you so much.